I have three kids, and so they're all, we love them all, right? And so we love all of our brands.
Just one more the other day than the other.
They have different strengths, different opportunities, yeah. Right?
But one kid's a weeded, one's, right. One kid's a high rise.
Welcome back. It's episode 276 of Bourbon Pursuit, the podcast featuring news, reviews, and interviews with those making the bourbon whiskey industry happen. Before we start today's podcast talking about Old Charter Oak, here's your weekly bourbon news update. Bullet Whiskey has announced that it's teaming up with American Forests, the oldest national nonprofit conservation organization in the United States and a leader in the forestry innovation industry, with a goal to plant 1 million trees over the next 5 years. This is part of the recently announced Bullet Frontier Fund that will help build a more sustainable future for the bartending and hospitality industry and those communities that surround it as well. Well, that's all for the news. Now let's move on to some bourbon release news. Founded in Tell City, Indiana in 1863 by German immigrant August Krogman, the Krogman brand has now relaunched as a straight whiskey company and has released the new Krogman's Single Barrel Collection. This set brings together all 9 of the currently produced MGP mash bills, and each whiskey is bottled at cask strength with no chill filtering and features a unique nickname for each barrel used. The nickname of each whiskey reflects a different aspect of what we typically see in the bourbon social media realm. Words like taterbait, wax dips, chugs, max profits, and among others. You can also mix and match, blending these single barrel expressions together to create your own unique blend. This is currently only sold in Indiana and has an SRP of $49.99. Widow Jane is releasing a 10-year bourbon called Decadence that was blended in small batches and finished in barrels that once held Crown Maple Artisan Syrup. Widow Jane Decadence is bottled at 91 proof, will be released at around 3,300 bottles, will be distributed on a limited basis to only 10 states, and has an SRP of $79.99. Barrel Craft Spirits is releasing a special blend of straight bourbon whiskeys that have been matured for 15 years. Distilled in Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee, this ultra-premium limited release was crafted and bottled at 104.9 proof. There will be 12,000 bottles of BCS bourbon available at select retailers and online via their website at barrelbourbon.com. It'll have a suggested retail price of $250, and it'll also include a classic black storage case. Jim Beam is releasing a new batched premium expression that is exclusive to the travel retail market called Lineage. This whiskey is the first collaboration between Jim Beam's 7th and 8th generation family distillers, Fred and Freddie Noe, who you heard back most recently on episode 254. Aged in charred white oak barrels and warehouse K since 2004, this bourbon is a 15-year-old and proofed at 110. It will be available for purchase at global travel retail locations in early 2021 for a price of $250. Michter's is putting out its 25-year-old release. This is led by master distiller Dan McKee, and Michter's determined it is now time for the new bottling run from this limited inventory. This particular vintage was last bottled in 2017, and the proof of this 2020 release is 116.2 and is set to price at around $1,000 for a 750ml bottle. No indication of the amount of bottles that will be available either. For today's podcast, it's great for two reasons. We're joined by Joshua Steele, who has probably one of the best jobs in the bourbon business by being the marketing director for bourbon at Buffalo Trace. But he's also a fan of the show, and we enjoy having guests like him on. This is also the first podcast where we cover the Old Charter Oak series. It's a line extension that focuses on the effect of different types of oak and what they do to bourbon. We're talking oak that's harvested from all over the world, and some of the oak being hundreds of years old. Did you see that we released our review of the 2020 Antique Collection on Whiskey Quickie this week? Well, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out on those bonus episodes. With that, enjoy today's episode, and now here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. As I look at the decanters from yesterday, oh man, they're pretty. They're ornate. You got things like the Ducks Unlimited, you got canteens, you got crows, you got penguins. They're all so cool, but one thing they didn't do is hold whiskey very well. Now listen, the greatest bourbon I've ever tasted was an Old Crow Chest decanter piece, and it's probably a miracle that the majority of those I have purchased were full. Now, I happen to also know the weights, and before I buy a decanter, I weigh them to see if anything had evaporated. However, as I look at the shelf and see how beautiful they are, what they're not doing is making me want to drink out of them. What makes me want to drink out of a bottle of whiskey is to see the whiskey. You see, I do not like the trend of bottles and bourbon being colored. While I like New Riff, while I think New Riff is delicious, and I think that's one of the more exciting new distillers that we have, I hate the bottle. I want to be able to see through the whiskey. I want to be able to see it. And that nice clouded bottle, while it is nice and everything, it does have some aesthetics, it's not letting me see it. There's a trend of a lot of brands coloring their bottles so you can't see the whiskey. Now, I'm not saying they're hiding anything, but when I can't see the whiskey, my first thought is it's young. So, if you want to see that trend change, if you want to be able to see the whiskey, let folks know. They listen to you. And that's this week's Above the Char. Hey, if you have an idea for Above the Char, be sure to hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube. Just look for my name, Fred Minnick. Until next week, cheers.
It's that time of the year where everybody's starting to make their vacation plans on visiting Kentucky, the mecca of bourbon. And if you are coming to Kentucky, you need to make sure you visit us at Pursuit Spirits in Louisville. We're right in the heart of Clifton, near Butchertown and Nulu, and only just a few miles away from downtown Louisville. But when you do come, you need to book your experience to go do our whole shebang. This is the one that's really the star of the show. You get a full-on tasting. You get to do your own personal barrel selection experience. And you get to grab a whiskey thief and fill your bottle directly from the barrel. We're doing something completely brand new that nobody else is doing here in bourbon country. Plus, you get a free sweet tasting glass at the end of it. I guarantee you, you're going to end up being one of the many people that's also leaving us a 5-star review. So make sure you come and check us out. You can book your reservation by going to pursuitspirits.com and clicking the Visit Us button. From their bar to yours, Chad and Sarah of the popular YouTube channel It's Bourbon Night bring you their favorite at-home old-fashioned mix with the new Elemental Elixirs Golden Hour Syrup. It's a custom-made syrup with notes of bold black tea, warm spices, and orange zest. All you need is your favorite whiskey and ice. No bitters needed. One bottle makes 16 drinks, so that's only $1 cocktail before you add your own whiskey. They can also be enjoyed in other cocktails or spirits, mocktails, coffee, tea, and anything you can think of. It's crafted locally in Lexington, Kentucky, and you can get your bottle now at whiskeyambitions.com.
It's that time again to get bourbon strong with Give270. Purchase your $50 tickets for your chance to win from our 50 bourbon prizes. Don't miss out on rare bottles and grand prizes like the legendary Pappy Set, a Weller Rainbow, and the Blood Oath Trilogy. Hurry, only 3,000 tickets are available. Single bottle winners go back in for the grand prize draw. Will you win the ultimate Pappy Set or one of our other incredible prizes? Get your tickets now at Give270.org. Charitable gaming license ORG 0002703.
Welcome back to the episode of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. Kenny and Ryan today at one of my favorite distilleries. I've always talked about this on the podcast. We're at Buffalo Trace today, and we're going
to be... I think it's everyone's favorite distillery.
I mean, with as much as everybody talks about Blanton's and stuff like that, you'd think that people are just... It's the whole world's favorite distillery. They're on every single news cover and outlet, and whatever's coming out next is the next new Pappy, and even though Pappy comes from here, so they're just, everything they touch is gold, it seems like.
Yeah, they can't fail here. It's like everyone here has the easiest job ever. It's like just, you make it, sell it. No, I'm kidding.
But today I'm excited because we're going to be talking about a brand that not many people actually know about. This is something that our guest actually reached out to us because we've owned and had him on the show before. And I'm like, let's think of a good topic. Like, what's a good spin that we can do? And he's like, what about Old Charter Oak? And I'm like, that's a fantastic idea because it is something that comes out of, you know, a long line of experimentation that they've been doing at the distillery. They've had a few different releases. It's very, very limited. It's hard to get. We had the opportunity to try, I think it was French Oak, maybe it was on our
French and Mongolian, maybe
something like that. But we did a barrel pick here for Eagle Rare and they brought it out and we tried it and I was like, oh,
this is delicious. Yeah, so
it's fantastic.
We're really going to dive into, you know, more about what Old Charter Oak is, sort of like the idea behind it, you know, all the experimentation, the story, everything like that.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I mean, like we said, most everything that comes out of here is like really fantastic stuff. So this is just another extension of that. And so I got five glasses of in front of me. So let's stop chattering
and
let's get to it. So yeah. We can start tasting.
So let's go ahead. We'll introduce our guests. So today on the show, we have Joshua Steele. Joshua is the marketing director of bourbon. Great title over here at Buffalo Trace Distillery. So Joshua, welcome to the show.
Well, guys, thanks for having me. Looking forward to this. Should be fun.
So before we kind of dive into this and before we dive into more about you, we always start the show with a random icebreaker. So yours is, what's the most ridiculous thing that someone has tricked you into doing or believing?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, man. What a question.
Repeat the question.
What is the most ridiculous thing that somebody's actually tricked you into doing or believing?
Okay. That's a really good icebreaker. And the first thing that popped in my brain was 16, 17 years old. My first car was a 1986 Chevy Blazer and had like a 3-inch lift and big wheels and tires. I worked at a car dealership detailing cars. And so I kept it immaculate. You know, it was my baby, it was my first car. And I had a buddy who's like, come on, this thing's 4-wheel drive, it's got big wheels, let's go off-road. And I would never do it. And then one day he talked me into, there was this field near where we lived, and he said, let's do it. And I had a moment of weakness. I did it. And let me just tell you, we about broke the car in the field. And when we got out of it, it never worked right ever again. I had problem after problem after problem. And I don't think I kept the car much after a year after that, because the off-roading session was a little too much.
Oh, man.
That's awesome.
It's a good story, though. I'll tell mine real quick, and then Ryan, I'll let you go last about that.
Perfect.
Okay, so mine was in college. There's a few guys in my fraternity, and we were in this group project together. And it was like one of those cake classes, sort of end of the year things. And they said, like, we had the end of the year kind of like presentation or readout. And they said, like, hey, we're actually going to dress up. So bring your suit, bring your tie. We're actually going to make this really good. So when we present in front of the class, and I was like, cool, you know. And I'm a freshman, they're a senior. So what do you think actually happens? I dress up in a suit and tie, I go to class. I walk in, I'm the only one wearing a suit and tie, and the whole place is just rolling laughing. So that was a good embarrassing moment for me. But they had me believing that we were going to actually do our presentation in a shirt and tie. And
I've never seen you in a shirt and tie, nor myself. I don't wear it much either. T-shirt and
tie. That was a little bit of like a Happy Gilmore Ninth Green,
exactly.
kind of moment.
Show up at the Ninth Green at midnight.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right when the sprinklers are on.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. This is a really dumb story, but it's first thing that popped in my head when I was a kid. I had like somebody's rookie card. It was like, I think it was like Mark McGuire or somebody that's worth a lot. And this guy was like, I'll give you 50,000 yen for it. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes. And so I took the 50,000 yen. I took it home. I was like, guys, I'm rich. Like went to my parents, I was like, I'm rich. And they're like, you know, it's only like $2. And I was like, so devastated. I gave away my Mark McGuire rookie card for $50,000 yen. Yeah.
Oh, man.
That was the first thing that popped in my head.
Who do you remember who you sold it to?
Some older kid. It was like, I was like in third grade. You. He was in fifth grade or something. I don't know why. Why would you have yen, you know, at that age? But I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if the word 50,000, you're like, it's sold.
Oh, I know.
Sold.
I'm like, I can buy all these Mark McGuire cards, you know, Power Rangers, whatever I want.
Power Rangers. Talk about flashbacks there.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into Joshua here. So talk about, you know, your role first, you know, being, you know, the director of bourbon, because we've talked about before, you know, today we've got Old Charter Oak, but, you know, you've got almost everything under the portfolio underneath you, don't you?
Yeah. You know, we have a lot of brands, you know, bourbon brands we make here at Distillery. And so, you know, a lot of them, you know, roll up into our team. And so, you know, the marketing director at the end of the day, you know, we do whatever we need to do. We're part of the team here at Buffalo Trace, but specifically we're just in charge of, you know, managing the business and the brands and sort of setting long-term strategy and visions for each one of our brands and really trying to unlock the potential long-term. And so what does that look like, day in, day out? It looks like a lot of things from, you know, innovation and new packaging and new product launches to, you know, making sure we hit our sales objectives to forecasting and allocations. And, you know, so a little bit of everything at the end of the day, you know, you're sort of a general manager, you put on a lot of different hats and, you just need to know enough in a lot of different areas to be dangerous and ask the right questions and bring the right people in to solve problems and that sort of thing. So
how hard is it to be a marketing director of something that just sells itself and like, but people want more, but you can't give them more? How hard is that?
Yeah, there's a lot in that question right there. I will say, I don't think it sells itself. You know, we're sitting in, well, we're sitting in this, yeah, we're sitting in this place in time. And I'd say there's been, you know, 100+ years of work to get to where we are today, but certainly a lot of work in the last 20 years from a lot of different people. And so the situation we're in today is a product of all of that. But it is an interesting position that we're selling, you know, every single one of our premium bourbon brands are allocated and, you know, we sell every drop of it. Obviously, we're cranking away, making more each and every year. You guys have heard Harlan and others talk about that, you know, the $1.2 billion of investment in capacity expansion. But it leads to a lot of other issues, you know, the fact that a lot of people want it and have trouble finding it on shelves. And that, you know, it's a problem. It's a, granted, it's a first world problem in some sense, but it's still an issue because we don't like to let people down at the end of the day. We'd rather people be able to walk in and find our stuff. You know, we don't try to be high maintenance on purpose.
If there's, as a marketing director, where is there a brand that you put more of your allegiance behind that you have more fun with? Like, I know that you all do a lot of stuff with being able to, you know, even lately exposing, you know, the personalities and the people on Facebook doing lives and stuff like that. And you know, you're either highlighting Angle Rare, you're highlighting Blanton's, you're highlighting something like that. Is there one that you look as like, hey, this is a good driver, like we're going to put more effort behind this one?
Yeah, really good question. We certainly have a lot of hopes for a lot of different brands, you know, and they're all important. So there's a little bit of a thought of like, you know, I have three kids, and so they're all, you know, we love them all, right? And so we love all of our
just
brands.
Just one more the other day.
They have different strengths, different opportunities, yeah. Right?
But one kid's a weeded, one's, you know, right. One kid's a high rye.
So I'd say the short answer is that, you know, we love them all. We try to be a little bit agnostic in that sense, but you know, we also we try to project. And when you're talking bourbon, look, you're trying to forecast 6, 8, 10, 20, 23+ years out, and you know, you have to figure out what demand is for those and sort of just take a really educated guess on what that'll be for each brand. And it's not going to be the same for every brand, right? And so we certainly have sort of priorities and have thoughts on which brands could be the biggest over long periods of time, but we try to fulfill each of the brand's potential at the end of the day.
I mean, are you really putting it in a spreadsheet, or are you just like, oh, just keep that still going, keep cranking them out, we'll keep filling barrels in the warehouses, well, we'll figure it out later?
There are a lot of spreadsheets involved and a lot of people involved in those spreadsheets because there's a lot of money on the line. At the end of the day, we just talked about $1.2 billion of expansion. And guess what? That's not coming out of, you know, my checkbook, you know, so someone's writing that check in. And so we put a lot of thought in a lot of conversation up and down the organization and these things, because there's a lot of resources riding on these decisions.
Yeah. And while we talk about brands, and, you know, Ryan's actually sporting one, can you talk about, you know, his early times now that that's going to be under the Sazerac portfolio? Is that something that you're going to have involvement with in now too?
Yeah, we're thinking through that as a team right now. Early times is interesting. Obviously, you know, it just came into the portfolio. But it's a brand that really sits in two places right now. It's a Kentucky whiskey, you know, using used barrels. And that's the majority of the volume. But then there's the bottle and the bond bourbon as well. And so
that's where we lie.
Right.
Yeah, that's where we love.
And I know then that's where my head is too, and my heart. So I think as an organization, we're trying to figure out what that brand's going to be long term, because it sort of straddles a fence right now.
And you know, also on the personal side of you, I know that you're a Vols fan, you know, from Tennessee originally. Kind of talk about how you got to this point being here at Buffalo Trace.
That's right, go Vols. Yeah.
cough.
No, I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. So grew up there. So that's what, you know, that's why my allegiances lie there. But in 2008, after business school, I did my MBA after business school. I moved to Louisville, my first job out of business school. I was working for Yum Brands, you know, KFC, Taco Bell, pizza, and had a lot of guys at work, you know, tell me about bourbon. I wasn't wasn't really into whiskey at that time, and they were telling me all about it. Living in Louisville, right? It's a bourbon town. It's part of the culture and the fabric of the city. And I have to say, when I tasted it, something clicked. It's for the first time, you know, this wasn't like rum and coke, you know, just drinking it, not putting a lot of thought into it, it slowed me down. It caused you to sort of dissect it and pay attention to the full sort of experience, from the nosing to the taste, to the, you know, to the finish. And I was hooked. So I sort of fell in love with bourbon in 2008. And, didn't work in the industry at that time, but my passion was brand building. And I thought, if I could ever combine my passions of brand building and bourbon, I would take that opportunity. And it took several years before I made that transition. That's kind of where it started for me. And that's how I got into the industry.
How did you get that opportunity?
So I was in consumer packaged goods, managing, doing what I do in just different categories to what I do today, and just built relationships. I was going to Whiskey Fest every year with buddies. And so every year I would just see a lot of the same people at Whiskey Fest. Chris Comstock, who leads our bourbon and whiskey marketing team here at Buffalo Trace. I started building a relationship with him and would see him every year. And then, just exchange emails with him every now and again and say, hey, I'm going to be coming back to Kentucky. My wife's from Louisville.
Where can I find some Blantons?
No, I never did that. I had my own sources, so I didn't need to infringe. But my wife's from Louisville. And so we would come back to Louisville all the time. And I'd come back through going back to home to Nashville a lot as well. And I'd stop and do distillery tours all the time. But I would just stay connected with him. And, he showed me around the distillery once or twice. And when I was ready to make a move, I just sent him an email and said, just a heads up, I'm making a move. I'd love to finally make that transition to bourbon. Let me know if you know of any roles in bourbon. I wasn't even thinking Buffalo Trace, but I got an email from a recruiter like 30 minutes later saying, actually, there's a new brand manager role at Buffalo Trace, managing the bourbon portfolio at Buffalo Trace. And the interview process started, and it was really just a blessing and right timing. And these things came together. Is certainly, I'm extremely fortunate to be in the position I was in. But, I knew in that moment I was super excited. I knew that job was for me. So
that's fantastic. And that was also, what year was that when you we started joining here?
2017.
So
it's been
okay.
About 3 years on the dot, actually. Yeah. I think I started right after Labor Day.
Yeah, I mean, you came in when it's been crazy, right? I mean, so has it gotten crazier since?
For sure. I mean, I came in, obviously, I mean, upward trajectory, even 3 years ago, but in 3 years, things have changed. Just demand on brands like Weller is a great example. I mean, when I came in, I was like, I think the first thing I did was raise my hand and say, hey guys, Weller's a big deal. We should probably think about maybe increasing the steel time for Weller even more than we're already doing. The demand for Weller in the last 3 years has just, you feel it's just palpable.
Yeah, it went from like a everyday bourbon to kind of like an insta-famous bourbon.
In 3 years
I used to go to Rite Aid and get it, and now people are like posting on Instagram, you got their Weller 12 and stuff.
Yeah, a funny story, when I came down to do one of my interviews with Mark Brown, our CEO and president CEO, I stopped at a CVS here in Louisville and saw Weller Special Reserve sitting on the shelf, and I was like, score. You just don't see that as much anymore. So things have changed on that brand in the last 3 years. I think Eagle Rare, same thing. You could find Eagle Rare a little more often, it seemed like. And I think demand on that has changed. So, these things are, we were in full swing of the bourbon boom for sure in 2017. But it's continued, which is great. It's great for us and it's great for everyone in the industry. So,
yeah, I mean, we all take notice about what you all do in regards of being able to kind of like reinvigorate brands and everything like that. I mean, as you said, when you said like Weller is actually a pretty big deal. And probably about that time is when the packaging chain started coming as well. I mean, new bottle shape and everything like that. And so, we've taken notice. It's been very easy to kind of see what you all do in regards of being able to take something and kind of like give it a little bit of a facelift and kind of make it even more of a premium product. Per se as well.
100%. That's been part of the strategy. And by the way, that was about the same time that new packaging was hitting the shelves about the same time I was starting. So that was that predates me. But the thought process was already there that we think we have something. It's probably more of a premium brand than we give it credit for or the way that it looks on shelf. And so some of that thought process had already started.
All right. We'll talk about premium brands in a little bit. I'm going to talk about your other premium brand, the one that we're actually here to talk to today. Yeah. So let's talk about Old Charter Oak. So kind of give us an idea of a little bit of the history of the brand, you know, why, and you know, like what was the idea of doing this extension and this experimentation?
Yeah. Actually the game plan for this one was informed by something else we had done earlier in the decade, in 2011, you know, we had this Old Taylor brand. Tons of history.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, right. tons of history. You know, but it was kind of, you know, bottom shelf. You know, it sort of migrated to sort of bottom shelf value type of bourbon. And we thought, there's too much history in this thing. And so the team, once again before me, but the team decided, let's just sort of relaunch that brand. And we relaunched it as E.H. Taylor, the brand that we see today. And so completely reinvigorated that brand, reprioritized it. And so it worked out really well. So we thought we had this other brand that was similar. Old Charter is a brand that we've had since 1999. The Chibizi brothers started in 1874. So a lot of history in that brand. But it just wasn't really doing a whole lot. And so we decided, why don't we sort of, you know, relaunch that brand or sort of just reframe it as a more premium, more current, relevant brand and lean into, I think, what the central idea of the brand was at the beginning. The you know, Old Charter was named after the Old Charter Oak Tree, which is this 500 plus year old oak tree that fell in the 1850s that was, you know, famous for holding like the Royal Charter of Connecticut in the 1600s. Like they hid this important documents from the British in this, you know, in the center of this big old tree. And so this idea of the Charter Oak was central to the brand originally. And we thought, well, let's just lean into that. Well, you know, this idea. So the central idea or tenet of this brand is how do we celebrate and explore the role oak plays in making great bourbon. And, you know, the TTB Rexe new charred oak container doesn't say American white oak. And so there's a sandbox there that you can play in that not a lot of people are really, you know, sort of exploring different aspects of that. And we decided that'd be a fun place to play. And frankly, we had already started doing that in our experimental as a part of our experimental program. And so we were already looking at different types of wood and we thought this would be a great, you know, so we sort of connected dots. This would be a great home for all these different wood experiments that we're doing, you know, over here. And so that's sort of the genesis.
So, you know, the other part is when you talk about the experimentation, you all are doing quite a bit of it, you know, versus a lot of other distilleries that, you know, you've got to do what's tried and true. We got to have our money maker. We, you know, stick to the plan, as they say. Now, when you look at the different variations that are coming out, you know, you mentioned of taking something like Old Charter Oak, but you also do that with the H. Taylor brand too. I mean, you know, you got the four grain and I mean, Tornado was a long time ago.
Cured oak
and seasoned wood. And so how do you decide which one goes into E.H. Taylor versus one goes to Old Charter and so on and so forth?
Yeah, that's, you know, one of my favorite parts of the job is just, I have many favorite parts of the job, I'd say, but it's thinking through, well, what's this brand all about? You know, from a, not just a personality standpoint, but from a whiskey standpoint, what is it about? Weller, you know, for us is about weeded, you know, that weeded bourbon mash bill, but once again, there's all kinds of things that you could potentially do there in exploring. E.H. Taylor has been about bottle in the bond. Like that's kind of, it's like the core of what that brand's about. But it still leaves room for exploration and experimentation in different mash bills. But you notice most everything we do is bottle in the bond, 100, bottle to 100 proof. Old Charter Oak, it's really about the wood, about the oak, you know? And so that's, you know, that's the filter. And so we take those filters into those experimental, you know, meetings that we have. It's a really neat process. So we can get into that if you guys want to.
Let's get into it. Yeah. It sounds amazing.
So it sounds like Old Charter might be a little more exotic versus like the E.H. Taylor. Like
it's just all about the wood. So if we do something that's really about exploring a different style of oak or different type of oak or an oak from a different region or whatever the case is, then the home for that experiment is probably going to end up being Old Charter Oak. Whereas if we do something that's centered around weeded, then it might be Weller as an example, theoretically. Or if we do some, we've done a lot of different grain experiments with E.H. Taylor. He was very innovative himself. And so four grain, amaranth, you know, things like that, we sort of have pushed those into the E.H. Taylor brand. So that's kind of how we think about it.
Who was wise enough, you know, I'm trying to think of like cured oak. That was when it was bottled. It was still, I think it was 17 years old. Who was wise enough back then to, you know, think of this stuff?
Yeah, it's a team approach. I'd say, you know, the way we do things here, it's a good example to get into maybe the experimental process. So we have an experimental team that has grown into, you know, 40 plus people. And it's really, you know, it's Harlan, obviously, but it's also, you know, marketing and people in bottling and processing and PR and people from, you know, it's a cross-functional team, sit in these meetings twice a year. And we look at our inventory of experiments that we've done. We've looked at a running list that we have of experimental ideas, and we prioritize those, you know. So the marketing team might come and say, hey, Harlan, you know, we've got this new brand, Old Char Oak, that's all about exploring and celebrating oak. I see we've got these different oak experiments going, which is great, but we need to keep trying new things because we want to continue to fuel that. So we know, and you know, his barrel team and procurement might go out and search cool new barrels for us to age some of our bourbon in, or so that's an example of how that works. But it's really a collaborative approach, a team approach. But a lot of times it's like looking at inventory, you know, in that E.H. Taylor example, 18-year marriage is a good one, a good example, you know, the most recent one, where we're like, you know, we typically do a special release of E.H. Taylor every year. We like to keep that going. Well, let's look at our inventory and what can we put together. And so sometimes it's looking in the pantry and figure out what kind of barrels that we have
tonight,
right? See what kind of, and we have a lot of barrels on site, obviously. And so looking, what's something fun and new that we can do that fits in what E.H. Taylor is about? You know, yeah. We just don't want to do something that wouldn't fit with the brand. And we were fortunate to find, you know, some ultra aged barrels of different mash bills, and we thought, you know, we hadn't done that before. Let's bring those together and marry those, and that could be our release. What we're trying to do now is obviously move forward and be a little more proactive. And so now we know that we have this old charcoal. We know that we want to continue to do new things. And so we like to plan ahead. And so if we want to release something 12 years from now, 10, 12 years from now, we need to find a cool new barrel or something we like today to make that happen. So hopefully 10 years from now, we're not just looking in the pantry and coming up with something, you know, ad hoc in a sense. So we sort of take it both ways, but either way you look at it, it's sort of a collaborative approach.
I do that for dinner all the time.
Yeah.
I'll go and be like, yeah, we want shrimp and grits. I don't have a pepper, but we'll make it without the pepper this time. Yeah. It's like, you just try to find something to make it work. But we've been going for 30 minutes now and I'm getting thirsty. So let's kind of start going through some of these and start tasting along here. So I'm going to let you kind of lead us and tell where we should start and how we should go through it.
Yeah. Great idea, by the way. So before we get into Old Charter Oak, I thought it'd be good to help prove the point of, you know, just the role, the importance of the barrel and the oak barrel. Let's start with sort of a control. And I thought that Eagle Rare would be a good sort of control bourbon for us. And so this is on the top left. Eagle
I was about
Rare.
To ask, and then I realized their label underneath. Yep.
I don't know. They pulled out all the stops.
You know, idiot proof.
Eagle Rare is our BT1 rye bourbon. You know, it's 10 years old, bottled at 90 proof, small batch. And so everything we're going to taste is between 9 and 12 years old. And they're all BT1, and they're all bottled in the low 90s. And so this is, I think Eagle Rare is sort of a good control for us. They're just just to see what the American white oak does in that sort of whiskey profile.
Yeah, and one of the things I think that you get the opportunity to be able to do is you get to try these as well as at barrel proof and 100 proof and everything like that. Did you find that when you took it down to in the mid-90s and that sort of proof, is that when more of that oak characteristic, because I'm looking at a few of them here, we got Mongolian, French, Canadian oak, Chinkapin oak. Is that when more of that oak character really starts shining through at those different proofs for you?
Yeah, it's it was a decision that needed to be made, and a couple of things go into that sort of decision. One is you look at it, and just from a pragmatic standpoint, if you don't have a lot of barrels, if you're going to bottle something in barrel proof, then you're making a decision like it's going to be really hard to find. And then from a whiskey quality standpoint, you know, we have other brands that really are about these big, bold barrel proof. You know, Stag is a great example, right? And so we have a brand that sort of does that, and you know, you can overdo it. So if we came out uncut, unfiltered, barrel proof, that Mongolian oak, by the way, came out of the barrel at something like 147, 149 proof.
Oh boy.
I tasted it barrel proof. It was hot. It was intense. It was plenty of flavor, but you know, but it fought back. And so it just wouldn't have been the best use of that. And this is about nuance and subtlety and complexity, and you know, and not about just like smack you right in the face whiskey. And so that's sort of what steered our decision in that. Not to say that we could never do something higher proof if we found something that that warranted it, but that's how we made that decision.
Yeah. And when we're going through these, at any point do you look at something and go like, this one turned out amazing, let's do this again, like get some more barrels, let's start filling them and putting them in the rickhouses?
Bingo. 100%. You know, because we
probably all four of them.
The purpose of
otherwise, you know, they wouldn't have bottled them.
The purpose of the experimental program is, you know, multiple fold. It's one, I mean, at the end of the day, we're trying to make the best whiskey we've ever made, the world has ever seen, you know, just trying to get better and better. And so you have to try new things. And, you know, a lot of times Harlan and his team and the production team and the still, they're trying to learn new things. I've never used this grain. What does that do? Or it might be some process thing. Then, you know, but from a marketing standpoint too, like it's nice to have fuel for these brands and new news, because people like new things, right? We all do. So you try something and yeah, hopefully you learn something, but if it's really good, you want to do it again. And so that's for sure our mindset. 100%.
Do it again and be like, well, we'll see you in 10 years.
It's not meant to be like a one-time novel thing on purpose. Now, the problem is we can't do everything. So if we, you know, so we have to pick and choose at the end of the day, but if we really like something, we're probably going to do it again. Problem is it takes 12 years to replicate that, mm-hmm. that whole process.
What's the cadence on these? Is it once a year or is it?
We've been doing, so far it's been twice a year.
Gotcha.
Spring, fall. So Eagle Rare, everyone feel good about the, does it familiar? You got, what
love
do you
it.
Guys think?
Yep.
Fantastic. Great start.
Tastes great.
So let's go. We're going to go chronological order. So our next is the top right, Mongolian Oak. So this was the first release. This sort of was the release that launched the brand or relaunched, you know, the brand, fall of 2018. This is BT1 aged in new charred Mongolian Oak barrels for 10 and a half years. This was extremely limited. This was an experiment. So Harlan started trying to acquire these barrels in 2006. I think he finally got them around 2008 at an exorbitant cost. And I think he bought 10 barrels. And after 10 plus years, three of the barrels were empty. The other seven were something like 30% full. And so we learned that Mongolian Oak doesn't hold liquid as well as we would like.
Maybe we should have pulled that in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. You know, but obviously it wasn't as good. So this is, we thought it was a really good one to launch because it proved that the barrel matters, right?
Oh, yeah. Just on the nose, you can tell instantly.
Obviously the barrel counts for 100% of the color, but Harlan will tell you well over half the flavor is attributed to the barrel. And this is sort of kind of, it proves the point. And so it's really different. So I'll just leave a minute for let you guys taste it.
Yeah, definitely do that. But also I'll get a kind of next question queued up for you. You know, as you're looking at these and I'm thinking Mongolian Oak, Chinkapin Oak, is this something you're working with like independent stave to go and like help source this wood, build these barrels, or are there barrel manufacturers on the other side of the world that are making these and you've just got to get them shipped over?
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. And with Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. And you can get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bourbon, all lowercase, and go to shopify.com/bourbon to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/bourbon.
If you're anything like me, then you can't get enough about bourbon. And that's why I'm a subscriber to Bourbon Plus magazine. Bourbon Plus is a quarterly publication that tells the stories from the heart of bourbon, the farmers who grow the grain, the distillers who labor over the process, and the people, like you and me, who raise their glasses to celebrate it all. Subscribe to Bourbon Plus magazine today at bourbonplus.com, that's P-L-U-S.com, and use code PURSUIT at checkout for $5 off your subscription. Is this something you're working with, like, independent stave to go and, like, help source this wood, build these barrels, or is there, are there barrel manufacturers on the other side of the world that are making these and you've just got to get them shipped over? Like, what's that process look like?
I think it's a mixed bag. You know, we have several barrel suppliers that we've worked with, independent stave we've certainly worked with. You know, I think there are different companies that have expertise in different parts of the world. You know, the folks, there's some companies that sort of, that are experts in French oak barrels, you know, for the wine and yeah, cognac world. So we're working with anyone who can help us achieve our goals, really.
What is Mongolian oak usually used for?
That's a great question. I don't know.
I didn't know if not some type bourbon of spirit or type of industry.
See, I thought it would have been like for furniture or something like that. You know, yeah, probably like some like crazy like wood grain or something like that. I don't really know.
I mean, it's a hardwood, so you can do all kinds of things with it. But
yeah, it immediately turns, you know, you the Eagle Rare from like, you know, that typical like cherry, sweet, you know, fruity notes to like something that's really deep, tannic, leathery, woody. Like it's got a real nice, it's like a whiskey geeks kind of.
I've got like a pine and cedar kind of thing. But yeah, to your point, it transforms it to this, away from sweet aromatics,
right,
fruity,
right,
to something else.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. No, it definitely is. And so the next one is,
I'll get my next piece of furniture and do like throw it in our one of our barrels.
Make your own staves out of it. Yeah. And just like throw it in there and be like, here we go. We're going to do our own Mongolian experiment. Because I would imagine, you know, sourcing this type of wood, like it can't be cheap. It's got to be a little bit of a pain in the ass to be honest with you, because, you know, it's a lot easier to just go and be like, well, we know white oak is going to work. And so we're going to dump this here. We're going to do this experiment. We'll see you in a decade. Hopefully we didn't lose all our money.
Yeah, it's not cheap. It's a complete pain in the rear end. It's very complex, and, you know, and so, but that, I think it just illustrates our commitment to experimenting. You know, the motto at the distillery is honor tradition, embrace change. And, you know, the experimental program fits into this embrace change notion. And you'll notice that all these are aged start to finish in new charred oak. They're not finishes. And so, you know, we took a different approach, a more laborious, you know, longer lead time approach. But we think the results are worth it.
Yeah. It's kind of opened up to some like lemon, kind of like reminding me of limoncello on the Amalfi Coast or something. I don't know. That's what popped in my head.
Ooh, look at you.
Whoa.
Like, taking it to a real experience.
Kind of lemony notes opening up here.
That's cool.
But when you drink it side by side, it's like with the Eagle Rare, it's, you know, definitely the oak, the Mongolian makes a huge difference.
Yeah. It's fun. You need that control point, you know?
Yeah.
I think to go back.
It's fun to go back and forth.
Yeah, for sure.
Now I'm looking at the color difference between like the French and the Mongolian oak, and it is stark difference.
Stark. I mean, you know, the Mongolian oak is just like, just very light color, which is strange. The French oak is got this like rich, you know, they're very similar proof, you know, almost a little reddish tint to it.
Got like a brandy color.
Yeah. The French oak was released in spring of 19. It's 12 years old. So a little more time in the barrel. So this will be the oldest one we're going to taste. It's 92 proof. The Mongolian was 90. So close in proof. But it's still BT1, number 4 char. But you know, French oak, and I have to say, as a team, when we tasted it, Harlan, Drew Mayville, the entire team, everyone's like, this is a home run. It's different. It's
like,
beautiful.
This is no fail.
It's beautiful. So it's one of my favorites of this line so far. So
yeah, I was about to say, for me, I like it a little bit more than Mongolian oak.
Yeah. The nose.
I think the finish lasts a little bit longer on it, but it's a fantastic, Ryan's, that's why I always look at Ryan for tasting notes, because he's the one that can pull these out.
Like right off the nose, you could smell like some butteriness to it. And like in it, on the palate, it's got that buttery, like kind of drizzle, vanilla drizzle on a raisin bran.
I think
not raisin bran, but bread pudding raisin. Like, I don't know. It's just very, it's delicate, but Man, it's good.
Keep talking.
Yeah.
Look, keep going. I think this is it really leans into the vanilla.
But the buttery notes, like we're at, and it's like almost that, like a buttery Chardonnay or something in there.
Thick, creamy mouthfeel.
Yep.
For a low proof, I mean, for a relatively lower proof bourbon, has all kinds of mouthfeel to it and a long finish. I think it's immaculate.
Yeah, that's a guzzler.
Yeah, it's true. I mean,
it gets you in trouble.
Usually at like 92, 93 proof, people are like, I'm really not getting anything out of here. Like, usually, I mean, even for myself, we're always like, it's got to be like 100 or above to kind of like really start getting more flavors and nuances and having a deep finish. This one might change my mind a little bit.
Yeah, you guys are like me. I mean, we're all bourbon enthusiasts, so you have a tendency to gravitate towards higher proof stuff over time. I think most people do. But I think the mark of a you know, separating good to great whiskeys, a mark of a great whiskey is that it can be low proof and still have that mouthfeel and long finish. And it's just harder to do with a lower proof. And so,
I mean, it's just like dusty bourbons. They're, you know, 80, 90 proof and there's so much flavor in there, you know, but there's a perfect proof for each whiskey, you know, so that's like perfectly, y'all nailed it with that one.
Yeah. And I get a little stoned for like apricots on this, which I think our backbone is more cherry, you know, sort of the fruit I get first, but, this one's a little bit different. So anyway, that's French oak.
That's a good one.
Well done, French.
Yeah, I know. Sign me up. I'll take two.
So we might do that one again.
Yeah,
I would think so. All right. So the next one we're looking at is before we get into that, I want to talk about the packaging a little bit, because you have a front emblem that is the, as you had probably talked about earlier, the actual old charter oak tree on the front. Is it made out of actual wood or is that a cork? Like talk a little about the packaging and what went into the design too.
Yeah. A long process that actually, the thoughts were sort of in place even before I came on board, but, we wanted to really lean into this oak thing. And so, you know, we had this charter oak emblem or icon that we wanted to really lean in. And, you know, packaging is just a lot of fun. You know, as a marketer, I sort of geek out about packaging. I think it's part of the experience. But we wanted to do wood coasters on the front of the bottle. And we did that. Obviously there's a lot of cost and complexity involved with that. And we spent a lot of time trying to get it right, make sure it would stick on the bottle really well.
You had to do like 10 different adhesives and test them. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes in packaging people don't actually understand.
Oh, absolutely. You know how many samples of these little wood coasters, you know, we got all kinds of them, different adhesives, but, the etching of the tree is really neat and, it's just tactile and it's fun. And it is not coming off that bottle, I promise you.
And before we start taking a sip of Canadian oak, I want to also kind of talk about the line itself, the availability. You know, as most people kind of know that anything that comes out of this distillery is likely going to be on allocation. I know you talked about twice a year sort of releases. How hard is this for the average Joe to be able to find?
It's as hard as anything we've done at the moment, but you know, we're cranking away on this one and over time volumes will grow on this brand for sure. It's a, the good news is the word isn't all the way out on this one yet. And so, you know, I've heard stories of people just
stumbling upon it,
you know, but we did limit the distribution from a geography standpoint because it was so little. We couldn't send it to all 50 states, you know, there wasn't enough. So we concentrated on some key markets, you know, some big markets, big states here in Kentucky.
What's the price point on it?
$70, $69.99.
Wow.
That's suggested retail, by the way.
You know. That's one thing I don't think y'all get enough credit for is the price points. You know, most distilleries are, you know, looking at the secondary market, taking advantage. You guys have held strong in like a real reasonable price point. Where does that stem from?
It stems from a lot of places. First and foremost, where we believe in offering consumers great value. You know, we want people to feel great about what they get for what they pay. And we're a privately held, family-owned company. We don't have shareholders we have to worry about on a quarter-by-quarter basis. So that plays into role. And we're very long-term strategic thinkers, I think, as a company. And so we're like, okay, if we're going to take a price increase, it's because it's the right thing to do for that brand on the next 20 years, not to take advantage of a bubble that's going on in 2019 or 2020 or 2021. Because, you know, we are in a little bit of a strange time when it comes to bourbon. You know, demand is increasing. At a faster rate of supply and people are catching up on supply. But right now we all see prices going through the roof. And so we want to remain steady and offer a fair price for what we do. And unfortunately we just can't control prices at retail. But that's our mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's awesome.
We've always said,
well, we appreciate it.
Yeah, I know. If you can find it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cheers to that. If you can find it.
Yeah.
So moving. And the other thing is that I remember I'm actually racking my brain with like a press release that we had gotten about these, and we called them century oaks, right? Like some of these, some of the oak that goes into these are coming from trees that are like hundreds of years old. Mm-hmm. Kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So far what we've done is we've had Mongolian oak, French oak, Canadian oak. Those are oaks from different countries, different parts of the world. Then we had chinkapin oak as our latest, which is a different species of oak. But we said in exploring and celebrating the role oak plays in making American whiskey, we could think about that in a lot of different dimensions. And one of the dimensions would be, you know, what would happen if you put a bourbon in a 100-year-old oak tree versus a 200-year-old oak tree, and so on and so forth. And so that's something that, you know, that we have planned and we haven't released yet, but that's another idea that you could see hit the market at some point. And we're going to continue to think of other ways to sort of slice that idea, you know, at the end of the day.
A lot of thinking going on.
Yeah.
Let's head north to Canada.
Oak Canada. So this is nine and change, nine plus years old, 93 proof. So similar, we bumped it up a little bit. BT1 mash bill. This is a number three char. And we haven't talked about the other ones we've tasted so far have been 6 month seasoning. This one actually had a 24 month seasoning, barrel stave seasoning. So a little longer seasoning time, but it's made from oak that came from Canada, colder climate. At the end of the day, Harlan will tell you tighter grain structure. And so it's really interesting, you know, hearing him talk about what that means. Well, over time, the whiskey's going to go through more growth rings. And so it really penetrate more years of that tree's life than a standard oak and pulls out different flavors. So I think it might take a little longer to pull out as much flavor, but it's a little more nuanced. And I have to say, this is right up there with French oak for me personally. It's beautiful for different reasons, but it's very subtle.
Ton of grape. I get so much grape flavor on it.
I was about to say, just on the nose alone, I don't get this note very often, but I was going to say blueberry.
Yeah, it does. It's got tons of fruity, like cobbler kind of notes on it. Mm. I don't know, man. It's really...
And this one's probably about the... Maybe not as dark as the French oak, but it definitely has a lot of color to it as well.
Yeah, and I don't know because I knew I was tasting Canadian oak, but I had this like... honey / maple syrup kind of thing, you know, in my head, but there's certainly a sweetness to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that. For me, a ton of grape notes and then opens up to this nice, like allspice kind of finish. It's really good.
Yeah. No, this is really good. This is actually, I think probably one of the more unique tastes out of the lineup so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's go back to Eagle Rare real quick, just to ground ourselves. Mm.
Oh yeah. Always got to get that control in there.
I don't want to.
I know.
I like these two.
Yeah, the Canadian, I mean, like it's got like some marshmallow flavor into it. Definitely like some honey and everything like that too. I think it's really, really good.
It's fun. In my mind, I thought this brand is for the bourbon enthusiast, right? I mean, I think this is like the perfect experience to experience this brand and taste them side by side and do ABs and, you know, versus controls. And there's each one is different, you know, different. Slightly different proofs. Obviously, barrels come from different places, different stave seasoning. So there's a lot to talk about and to sort of geek out about, which I think makes it more fun.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of variables when you just mentioned, you know, the stave seasoning, how long it is, the char level, you know, how long it is aged. Like there's so many different variables into it. So when you go back and you look at something like whether it's the French or the Canadian oak and you're like, oh, okay, how can we replicate it? Are you going to We're going to say like, okay, we know this one was by the book. This is what we look at the spreadsheet. Let's go ahead and just redo this one. You're like, well, maybe we'll like change the toasting. We'll toast the heads this time. We'll do something like, is this, and that's probably, this maybe goes to like Harlan or Drew that says like, oh yes, if we did this, it's going to change this character in X amount of years.
Yeah. I mean, if we really like it, the idea would be hopefully to do it again. But you know, sometimes, you know, you'd have to go back and look, these were sort of, When these things were put into the barrel, there was no plan for them, you know, this first set that we're tasting through. And so they might have used some barrel supplier that we don't even use anymore, you know, and so you might not be able to replicate it 100%. And we all know that There's always going to be subtle nuances, especially when you're dealing with really small batch things and
Different trees.
Different trees and all that sort of thing. So who's to say? I don't know where this the oak from this Canadian oak barrel came from. And so maybe you buy
I'm trying
Canadian
to think what makes a Canadian oak. Because I'm like,
I had to take
I don't know, I'd take botany and for my degree. And I'm thinking about like, just in America, there's like five different oak species. And so in Canada, I'm trying to think of what would be different because it's so close geographically.
And I don't know, it might be the same species, but just it's from a different region.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But even if it's the same species, if that oak tree grew in Missouri versus Nova Scotia, there's for sure.
The fifth release is going to be Missouri oak.
Well, actually, that's kind of like most of the barrels already in existence. They come from the O's, you know, around there. So.
That wouldn't, wouldn't be a lot of different.
That wouldn't be very exciting.
They'd be like,
folks in Missouri, though, would probably be proud of that.
That's why I'm not a brand manager. I'm just a lowly podcaster.
Yeah, it's okay.
But we do have plans to do state oaks, you know, and so explore like regionality even within the U.S. So an oak tree that grows in, you know, Pennsylvania is going to be different than something that grows in South Alabama or something.
I got a nice pin oak in my yard if y'all want to use it for one.
Just one though, right?
Yeah.
And so before we start, get into chinkapin here a little bit, I also want to talk about because, you know, there was also if you're new to bourbon, you might not have seen them. They used to come out in 375s was the Buffalo Trace Experimental Collection or what people refer to as BTEX. And those were, I mean, they're all over the place, right? When we think of stuff like that, are those things that you're like, okay, they were too small to be able to turn into a release, or they just didn't fit the profile you all wanted? Like, what was the reasoning behind there versus how we could like find barrels that go into something like Old Charter Oak?
Yeah, we still have that, and we still do those releases, but we'll probably put something in one of those bottles and just bottle as experimental collection if it doesn't have a natural home from a brand standpoint, or we don't have enough of it. You know, some of these are really small experiments or, you know, just really far out there. And so it wouldn't, if you did something, I'm not even gonna make something up, but you know, something too crazy and put in an E.H. Taylor barrel, you know, it's like, it would change the way people view the E.H. Taylor brand as an example. So it's part brand fit and part how much of it do we have.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's dive into chinkapin real quick. And then also want to throw another question at you of like, you know, these are our experimentations. Experimentations are good, but sometimes they're bad. Do you have an example of like anything that's ever gone bad in your opinion?
I don't know. We've certainly had experiments that didn't go as well. We've had a lot of what we called failed experiments, and we actually bottle them as for posterity. So the folks that come, you know, 50 years from now, don't do the same thing. I think we did some small barrel experiments. As an example, you know, there was a lot of experimenting on different size barrels, 5, 10, 15 gallon barrels.
Those are cute.
Like they're adorable. That was
going on in the industry really, you know, 5, 10 years ago, a lot more than today.
I think Knob Creek just did that, like the quarter oak or something. Yeah, with the small barrels.
So we did it and it didn't work out. And we were like, nope, we're not putting that in the bottle. We're not selling that. But we bottle it and we put a big red
do not do
fail
again
logo on it, and so it didn't work for that's an example of one that didn't work for us, and but it's okay because the point is to learn, and so we learned something.
All right, chinkapin, give me a lowdown.
It's a species of oak that I think
I didn't learn this in botany.
Yeah, it's a species of oak that grows in the Midwest primarily, I think, and so this is 9+ years old, BT1 again, 93 proof. This is actually 24 months seasoning. Mm-hmm. This one
long seasoning.
I thought you were gonna say that whiskey.
Number three char. Yeah.
Yeah, what was the age on this one? You said a little bit over 9.
Yeah, 9+.
Yeah, this one's got a different flavor proof. It's
nose,
it's a little more dry, and I'm eyeing
I think they're dry. I got this like fresh herb kind of thing going on.
Yeah, it's definitely earthy, more like not oregano, but you know, like herbs.
Italian seasoning.
Yeah, something like that. Not Italians. I'm not trying to say that. Very herbaceous versus the other ones, which were like more dried fruits and elegant. This is like off profile, but it's good though. I like it.
This is the, it's different. And you know, a couple, it's really all about the wood, and then the stave seasoning is different. The Canadian oak, actually, I think I misquoted. It was 10 plus. So a little bit older, but this is the youngest one at 9.
Yeah. Like I said, it's different for me. My allegiances lie with French and Canadian. I think that's where I'm at.
You know, they're all fun, but it sort of proves the point that the Barrel Matters.
Yeah, I like Canadian. I think Canadian and French, Mongolia Chinkopin.
There you go. Now you know Ryan's.
They're all good.
No, this was fantastic, especially to kind of go through, you know, this entire lineup. I think we made a lot of people jealous because not a lot of people get this opportunity.
By the way, I think this is the first time we've done this, you know, for sure, you know, with all four. We've done some tastings before, but I don't think they've included, you know, the first four releases.
But we appreciate the
bottles. We haven't done it much.
Yeah, I mean, this is, like I said, this is a fun experiment, and definitely awesome that we're able to try all these because not a lot of people get the opportunity to, and, you know, being able to, you know, shining more light on the brand so people are just not like, oh, it's another limited release I'm never going to see, but they know more about it, right? They can appreciate, you know, the experimentation. They can appreciate the amount of time that's involved and also the brand building that goes behind it and making sure that, you know, you're testing 20 different kinds of adhesives of that's actually going to go on this bottle, right? Like there's a lot of thought that actually gets poured into it. So thank you so much for coming on and definitely sharing this opportunity with us.
And thanks for having me. It's fun to talk about what we do. You know, it's a blast. It's, you know, I love doing what I'm doing. And at the end of the day, whiskey's supposed to be fun. So
yeah,
thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So Joshua, before we kind of sign off, if there's any way that people want to follow you, and kind of learn more about you, how would they be able to do that?
Yeah, it's not about me. I just say follow all of our brands. Follow, go to Old Charter Oak, you know, the website, and follow us on social. We're on, you know, the brands on Instagram and stuff. So, follow all of our brands.
So again, Joshua, thank you so much for coming on and for Buffalo Trace for hosting us here today. Make sure you go follow those brands. If you find Old Charter Oak, good luck out there. You know, try to find it, especially, you know, like I said, I thought French and Canadian were really great, but honestly, all these, and I think what Joshua actually did in giving us a control of Eagle Rare,
yeah,
really set the tone of what this is going to be, because you definitely see all those nuances and taste them between different variations, because if it is the same mash bill and it's really just the oak that's the different character, it stands out. It's very
yeah. Possible. If you're lucky enough to get one, you gotta do it up against an Eagle Rare. It's amazing the difference between them, and you know just what the oak does. So yeah, kudos to that.
And I would just say everyone be patient. I mean, we're gonna keep doing more of it, and we'll have more volume. And so just because it's harder to find today, it might not be that as hard. You know,
you're 9 to 12 years.
Yeah. Well, our kids will be almost graduated from high school by then, something like that. Yeah.
I'll be good celebrating.
Come to those who wait.
That's right. Can't rush perfection.
Absolutely. So again, thank you so much. And make sure you follow them. Follow us on all the socials as well, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And if you like what you hear, want to actually share it with other people, leave us a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify. And if you want to help support the show, check us out at patreon.com/bourbonpursuit. With that, cheers, y'all. And we'll see you next week.
Toodles.